What's going on in Washington?
Geneva, don't give up hope yet.
Disaster insurance, public or private?
From Washington, NBC News brings you transcribed Keys to the Capitol, a weekly news program in which the National Broadcasting Company's top Washington reporters and commentators discuss with you the news of the week and what's behind it. Tonight, you will hear Richard Harkness, Robert McCormick, and Herb Kaplow. NBC News has given these men the weekly assignment of going through Washington's official doors to learn the background of our national policies. We bring you now Keys to the Capitol. And first, here's NBC correspondent Richard Harkness.
Well, gentlemen, if anything is clear today, it is that the news from Geneva is anything but promising. We and the Russians are butting together our diplomatic heads on any agenda subject you want to mention, such as Germany or on the red sales of arms to Egypt, you name it, and we're disagreeing with the communists. Well, this is to project a kind of hunch, however, that despite the gloomy news, that the big four foreign ministers will wind up in some kind of agreement. There was that feeling, as you recall very well, after the meeting of the summit, of an easing of tensions. The plain people of the world liked that somewhat relaxed feeling. The chances are, then, that the foreign ministers, being politicians, will not be content to leave Geneva empty-handed. That was a further guess. One might conjecture that there will be some kind of type of agreement in Geneva on this question of disarmament. We will make some concessions, no doubt, and then Russia will do a little backtracking as well. There will be progress on President Eisenhower's plan for aerial inspection of arms plants. Now, one must add here that this would seem to be good Russian strategy to come to some kind of agreement. In the Middle East, Africa, Cyprus, almost any place you point to around the world, the communists are making headway without firing a shot. It is to their advantage to keep the Western world relaxed. Bob McCormick, you were at Geneva at the meeting of the summit. What do you think of this, the progress, the gains that the Russians have made since the big four heads of state met?
Well, actually, Dick, I have a sneaking suspicion, which I think is shared by people who know a lot more about it than I do, that there may be some Russian concessions at Geneva because the Russians themselves may feel they have to make them to keep their own people happy. That feeling began to get around at Geneva even towards the end of the summit talks, and it seems to me to be even more pronounced now. And I think the more of this exchange of various groups we have, the more things like that go on, the more pressure there will be inside Russia for a further relaxation. One version of it I got was that Bulganin or Malenkov before him neither had the absolute authoritarianism that Stalin had, and consequently where Stalin could just tell the Russian people, we are going to close up the borders and shut ourselves off from the world, that the men that are now running the country wouldn't have that much power, and they might just be a little bit scared and make concessions such as allowing free travel and increasing trade and stopping the jamming of radio stations and that sort of thing. Well, does that make any sense to you?
I'd say that your prediction, you're certainly in good company when you make it, because General Montgomery, who just flew in from Paris, you know, this week to see President Eisenhower, said that he feels that this Russian smile is genuine. He goes on and says that the Russians should now back up the smile with some concrete deeds, but he used that word genuine in explaining the Russians' new position. Oh, well, you, as I say, are in good company.
I hadn't heard that, but it seems to me that it's theoretically possible to make agreements with the Russians on everything except two very fundamental things. The first, of course, is the reunification of Germany, and the second is giving freedom to the satellite countries. I don't think we're going to get a reunification of Germany for years, probably 10 years, if ever, and I don't think we're ever going to get the satellite countries sprung from their dictatorship.
Aren't you saying, in effect, then, Bob, that there'll be no European Security Pact because we insist on reunification of Germany first?
Oh, I don't think there can be.
Do you people feel that the people who went to Geneva felt that there would be such an accomplishment?
You mean this time?
Yeah.
Yes, I think so. I'd be my best guess.
Honestly, one feeling that within the period of 6 months or however long this session of the Geneva meeting takes, that there will be reunification of Germany?
I'd guess differently.
Oh, that there'd be reunification
that
of Germany?
That there would be
oh,
such
no,
a major
no.
accomplishment.
Oh, no. I thought you meant that there'd be other concessions.
No, I... think Mr. Dulles went in a thoroughly realistic frame of mind. Say what you want to about John Foster Dulles, agree or disagree, he's a realistic diplomat. He wasn't fooled.
I would think that aside from the points you made a moment ago, Dick, as to the possible accomplishments there, we may see something in the field of trade, perhaps. Perhaps a lessening of some of the restrictions on our trade toward red countries and vice versa. Of course, that's where the Russians reportedly have been sort of hurt. I wonder whether you people feel that that possibly is in the wind.
I wouldn't hazard a guess on that, Herb. I don't think anything important trade-wise will come out of Geneva. Along that line, I was talking there a moment ago about the Russian gains. You notice how they're now using their economic trade agreements as a weapon. They've gone into the Middle East. They're making trade deals all over. Egyptians, they can take some cotton. So this economic business is a very real communist weapon, just as much as arms.
I wonder whether you people feel that we have gained at all since the summit meeting of July. When was it, June or July? Whether we have gained at all from in that period of time. The era of good feeling, or whatever you want to call it.
Well, I think we have, if only in one respect that the great thinkers might consider minor, but which is very important in human terms, and that's the fact that we got what amounted to a promise from the Russians that these promiscuous shooting downs of planes would be stopped. And of course, one followed almost immediately, but for the first time, the Russians apologized for it. You may recall.
I suppose they were very quickly too.
Yeah, they didn't fiddle around with it. And strangely enough, psychologically, I think, is a very important thing.
Yes, I do, too. And then Mr. John Hollister, who heads our foreign aid program just back from the Far East, said that he thought that Southeastern Asia was in better shape than it was a few months ago at the time of the Formosa crisis. That would be a plus on our side. I think, however, generally, Herb, that the West has lost in rather important degree. A weakening of the North Atlantic Treaty Organization, the scrap between the Greeks and the British there at Cyprus, that's the southern anchor of our NATO anti-communist line, that we've lost a great deal more ground than the communists have since the meeting of the summit. It's rather frightening, I think.
Well, then what you're pointing out is when our government officials try to warn us against, even before the June meeting, that we are not to lessen our strength in any way because of this, whether it was artificial or otherwise, show of friendliness between the East and West.
Tried to warn us before, and Vice President Nixon and Mr. Dulles have made much more pointed speeches. The Dulles speech before the American Legion the other day down in Miami, for instance. Yes, I think that they're trying to point out to us our position.
I have heard it said that at the time of the summit meeting, that while the government was trying to warn us not to expect too much, and at the same time not to let our guard down, that there were elements within the State Department that themselves were getting swept up in this wave of optimism. Had you heard that?
Well, I think the wave of optimism was more at the White House than it was at the State Department, Herb.
Well, now, a great many of these setbacks we've taken since the summit talks are only indirectly connected with the Russians. The French walkout from the United Nations, for example, over the Algerian vote was, of course, the Russians took what you might call the troublesome side of the vote. But at the same time, they had lots of pretty high-grade company on that.
That's
one,
right.
And the situation in the Middle East now, with the Russians agreeing to furnish, or the communists agreeing to furnish arms to Egypt, now I see today Afghanistan says if they don't get them from the West, they'll have to get them from the communists. That isn't, while it is part of the Cold War, that situation itself was not brought about by the Russians directly.
No. They're not trying. They took the Arab League along with them, for instance, in the vote on the Algerian question, which worried us diplomatically. No, I think the point is that there are troubled waters around, that the communists are very adept at getting in and making them more troubled and then fishing in them, and that's what they've done.
Then you're hitting a very basic question as to whether or not there is a sincere desire on the part of the communists for peace through these Geneva meetings.
Oh, right. I don't think there is.
Farthest
thing from my mind.
I'm thinking that in terms of Marshal Montgomery's statement, in which he felt it was a sincere desire, but now they had to prove it.
Yeah, sure. And I haven't seen any proof so far.
No, I haven't either. I do think that there may be a pressure inside Russia for a a lessening of the tension, just as there is inside the United States. And it may just be, about the point I was trying to make, that their current dictators aren't strong enough to squelch this the way Stalin could. But I think that would be about the most you could say. I think probably all the rest of it is nothing but communist strategy.
Mm-hmm. The only one question arises in my mind is that as to the whatever I heard about internal troubles in the Soviet Union, they did not seem to be based on any great desire, or at least vocally, of the people there for peace. It had to do with economic problems, agricultural problems, and so on.
Well, I just, I'm basing most of what I'm beginning to suspect on the reports that have been brought back by the various newspapermen and businessmen that have been allowed in there recently.
The senators who were just back, the Washington Star had a very interesting roundup, the impressions of 11 of them, and such people as Senator Malone, certainly nobody ever called him Pinky Malone, came back and said he saw no sign of a crack-up within the within Russia, and some pretty good observers, I think. We had some good men over there. John Sparkman from Alabama, a good senator, came back. Nobody thinks that Russia's going to crack up internally.
Well, I'd like to get around to a domestic matter for a second. As you gentlemen know, Senator Lehman is the head of a subcommittee that's been holding hearings in the Senate on the broad subject of disaster insurance. Now, as I understand it, he's trying to figure out some way to help the people who get smacked by the hurricanes and the floods, particularly in the northeastern states. Senator Lehman expressed himself as being very disappointed at the fact that the administration has not yet come up with a specific program to handle disaster relief, disaster insurance. And he said this right after the assistant budget director, Jones, I believe it is, appeared before the committee. And what Jones actually did was lay down a broad outline of what the program, if any, should and shouldn't do. He said that the total amount of insurance should be limited, for example, and the amount issued to each individual or firm should be limited. And I think he suggested the figure of $250,000. And it should cover only real damage, that would be actual damage to houses and cars and things, and it should have a flat deductible amount, as we do in insurance, in an automobile insurance policies, a $50 deductible thing, which would cut out a lot of small claims. And then he pointed out that there are no standard rates to go on in setting the premiums, so he thinks any agency set up should have a good bit of leeway in setting the rates. And finally, he said the program should consider using regular insurance companies to handle the whole thing. And it seems to me that that's the key to the entire business. As I understand it, now private firms have all sorts of disaster insurance, except insurance against floods. But it seems to me that here's another one of those fundamental questions of whether it should be done by private business or should be done by the government. And one thing I've not had time to check up on is whether private insurance companies want anything to do with it. Do you know whether they do or not?
No, I don't accept the... You can infer, I think, from the fact that they are not written in standard policies, that there must be some reason for their reluctance to get in the area of flood insurance.
Well, that's sort of what I was getting at. It seemed to me that what we probably would wind up with is private insurance that's insured in turn by the government. And is
there is that crop insurance, which is a sort of a similar thing, isn't it? Now, is that insured by private companies?
Oh, that's a government... That's a government project, I believe. I'm getting
I think
a little
so.
Over
Federal
my head
crop
on
insurance.
The...
Well, it's a private company. I don't know. I'm just wondering if private companies are in any way involved in that. But I guess it's the government. It goes along with a lot of other
I don't believe private companies are, but do you people think the government should set itself...
You have been listening to Keys to the Capitol, brought to you transcribed by NBC News as a way of taking you behind the doors of official Washington with NBC's top reporters and commentators. Tonight, you have heard Richard Harkness, Robert McCormick, and Herb Kaplow. Keys to the Capitol will be brought to you at this same time next week. Daytime companion to America's women, it's weekday, starting Monday on NBC Radio.